Second reading this evening is from Isaiah chapter 11, which can be found in your church Bibles on page 697 or on the back of your service sheets if you've got one. Yeah, to a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash round his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together. And a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young children will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. This is God's word.
Evening, everybody. My name's Phil. I'm the associate vicar here. It's lovely to have you here with us to begin the Christmas festivities. I think as soon as the bell starts to chime, it's, oh, Christmas has come. Now, what do you think the greatest Christmas movie ever is? Now, of course, no Christmas film has ever won an Oscar, perhaps unsurprising, but according to AI, the top six Christmas films, let's see if you can do better than the 5 p.m. lot who missed one of them out. Who can guess any of the top six Christmas movies of all time?
Love Actually.
Well, now technically, technically you're right, but I had to disqualify Love Actually as a punishment for turning Mariah's All I Want for Christmas into a cultural juggernaut, and it deserves the punishment of being excluded for that. 11.5 million streams a week in the UK alone through December, that song gets. So I'm sorry, but I overruled AI on that one. But other than Love Actually, I have not overruled. So what others? I'm playing fair now. Die Hard, yes, absolutely. Christmas film. Christmas mentioned 18 times. Takes place in a Christmas party, and it involves a hero who comes from above and who's... who suffers and bleeds to save his people. It's a Christmas film. It's a Christmas film. What others?
Elf.
Elf, definitely. Elf is in the top six. Four to get. Home Alone, definitely. Yep, Home Alone. Three to get. It's a Wonderful Life. Yep, everybody knows it. Who's actually seen it? Yep. Ooh, cultured bunch. Two more to get.
The Holiday.
The Holiday, yep. The Holiday's made it. Rom-coms. No, this is the one they didn't get either. Yeah, Muppets Christmas Carol. Yeah, absolute genius film if you've not seen it. Really worth a watch. I don't want to hear from you afterwards if it's an argument about Die Hard or Love Actually. I've just got to be honest. Now, what makes a Christmas movie a Christmas movie? It's the happy ending. Everything works out in a Christmas movie. I mean, let's be honest, nobody watches The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas on Christmas Eve. We want a happy ending at Christmas. In a Christmas movie, just when everything seems lost and hopeless, the magic of Christmas kicks in. The snow begins to fall, and hark, what is that noise but a distant choir? And then, oh, the guy and the girl get together. The burglars are foiled. The hero triumphs. Christmas wins. Problem, of course, is that real life is not like that. Christmas movies are not real. Do you remember a couple of years ago, Jude Law admitted on Radio 2 that the cottage from The Holiday, what was it called, Rose Hill Cottage, it wasn't real. It was just a fake that they built out of wood, and then they just demolished afterwards. And when he announced this in the studio, And there was a campaign to have him cancelled on social media for destroying the magic of Christmas. However did we survive the Blitz, people? I mean, come on. It's quite ridiculous. Now, we don't live in a Christmas movie, but here's the question for you. What kind of movie do we live in? I don't mean that life is some Truman Show or anything weirdly meta like that, but I mean, what's the kind of narrative that we live in? What do you tell yourself is life is about? Where is the world going? What kind of story are we part of? Some believe we're in the narrative of progress. We tell ourselves, look, the story we're part of is this. The world is a bit of a mess. There is darkness and there's difficulty in our world, but we are on a general slow upward trajectory. You know, it's slow, but we are getting there. The only problem, of course, is that although technologically we've come an incredible way, well, you look around at the beginning of the 21st century and there are just as many dictators and pandemics and economic crashes and institutional injustices as ever there were. What's just happened in Syria, in one sense, is a perfect encapsulation of this. A wicked dictator who used chemical weapons on his own people, Assad, seems to have been ousted. Hurrah! Progress! Who's taken over? Oh, it looks like the country's now being run by Islamists. Oh. Progress doesn't seem to be the story of the world. Others tell you that, actually, I think we're kind of, it's karma. Karma, by which we mean, look, if you do good, eventually the universe will smile on you and life will work out. And if you behave like one of them, then eventually the universe will bite you. Except, of course, we all know utterly wonderful people who go through unspeakable misery in their life. And some people who are really, really unpleasant and who somehow skate through life with none of the mud ever sticking to them. Even more bleak than karma, some will tell you, actually, it's chaos, really. There's no story, no purpose, there's no meaning. We just live in a wild universe of meaningless events. It's a view you might feel is reinforced every time you doom scroll through the news at the moment. Most of us, I guess, we just got no answer. I have no idea what I'm part of, what the meaning of the world is. I'm just busy trying to build successful relationships and get through life without being cancelled or sacked and somehow make a go of this thing. Now, this matters, though, because, well, I think whether you admit it or not, deep inside, we do have a need for meaning. We do have a need to understand what is the world about? What is the purpose of life? Where is the world going? What story am I part of? I read an article actually last week about this sense of meaninglessness and lostness, which is overwhelming many in our culture at the moment. A young worker said, I walk out of my house each morning and I'm overwhelmed by anxiety. I just don't know why I'm here. Many of us feel like we're at sea without a compass or a map. No idea. And the wonderful, glorious news of the passage we just read is that for all the darkness and the chaos, we live in a hero story with a happy ending. Because Christmas celebrates the arrival in history of the King who would bring justice and everlasting peace. I want to take a few minutes to look at this hope. Now, the words we've just read, they're part of the Bible, and they're from a section in a book called Isaiah, written by the prophet Isaiah, around 700 years before Jesus Christ came to the earth. And the promise begins, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. Now, all good Christmas movies have a situation of jeopardy, of hopelessness. Scrooge's bitter heart that will destroy himself and Bob Cratchit and countless others. Hugh Grant's inability to tell his secretary that he loves her. John McClane's lack of shoes in a skyscraper full of terrorists. And Isaiah's prophecy comes at a moment of jeopardy. He's writing to a shattered stump. The superpower of the day is about to sweep down and raise their capital city to the ground, burn the temple, slaughter the people, and drag the survivors into captivity. But God says, it's not over. There is hope, even for you. And hope comes with the birth of a king. That's this mention of Jesse, a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Jesse was the father of Israel's greatest king, David. So he's saying, look, a new king in David's line will come. But this is not a king just for one nation, one people. As we see, he's a king for the whole world. And this historical text tells us three things about this king, which bring us the hope of a happy ending. Three things. One, he knows what to do. Two, he does what is right. And three, he brings perfect peace. Firstly, he knows what to do. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord. Now, this leader will have God's wisdom and understanding. So he'll be wise enough to know, well, how on earth do you balance the desire of people suffering terminal illnesses to have control of the end of their life with those who say human life has value and I don't want to be coerced into taking my life? How do you balance those demands? He knows how to welcome immigrants and how to have a cohesive society with a shared moral framework. He knows how to do these things. Don't you long for a leader like that? Secondly, he doesn't just know what to do, he does what is right. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide by what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. In other words, he won't make decisions based on appearances. When people stand before him for justice, skin color, accent won't make any difference. He gives justice to anyone and everyone. And his judgments are effective. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. With the breath of his lips, he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt and faithfulness the sash around his waist. Now, I think the award for the most British news story on 2024 goes to this. Mobile provider O2 has created an AI granny called Daisy, who sucks in fraudsters and then just spins them along for hour after hour with her rambling granny anecdotes, so that they can't spend their time defrauding real members of the public. So, you know, fraudster thinks he's getting somewhere and is like, what's that, dear? My password? Oh, I know. It's the date of my marriage. That's what it is. You know, my Reg and I have been married for over 70 years. On our 60th anniversary, do you know, we went for a cruise. Oh, it was ever so lovely. I had to put the cat, though, with Mabel next door, and I was very worried because I wasn't sure Mabel was emptying the litter tray often enough. And when we came back, she had a UTI. I mean, the cat, not Mabel. But talking of Mabel, you know, oh, just tell me your password. And just terrific, terrific British response to the issue of fraudsters. But fraudsters, they are no laughing matter. When my dad died a couple of years ago, my mum was inundated with phishing emails and fake bank phone calls. And I found out when I did some digging that actually they often target bereaved relatives, because they figure that with all the grief, people aren't thinking very clearly and they're much more likely to be hooked in by fraud. I mean, how wicked is that? I don't just want their time wasted. I want them stopped. I want them brought to justice. Well, Isaiah's king speaks words that do more than waste the time of the wicked. His words are so powerful that he breaks the power of oppressors just by speaking. Don't you long for that? Thirdly, the result of his rule is perfect peace. The promise ends with one of the most captivating visions, really, of the entire Bible. The wolf will lie down, will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den. The young child will put his hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. I mean, that is the strangest Attenborough documentary you can imagine. But it's a metaphor for perfect peace, for impossible reconciliation. Wolves and leopards nuzzling up together to lie down with lambs and baby goats. Now, intractable conflict is one of the defining features of our world. Think of the Middle East on our minds at the moment. It's been almost 100 years that we've been trying to find a pathway to peace there. Of course, we are not completely incapable of creating peace, but usually it requires a separation or threat. And we've got two boys at home, aged 8 and 9, and sometimes we have wonderful peace in our house, even when they're awake. But it almost always involves one of them in that room and the other in that room. I read Nayib Bukele, who was one of the Times People of the Year, when he took over as president of El Salvador in 2022. It had the highest murder rate in the world. And now apparently it's as safe as Canada, whatever that means. But apparently Canada's very safe. And do you know the reason why? He's locked up 81,000 suspected gang members. Now, Isaiah's vision is something much more radical than this. It's not peace through locking the wolves away. It's peace through transformation. That strange phrase, the lion will eat straw. In other words, the point is, the lions and the wolves are still there, but they no longer behave like lions and wolves. It goes way beyond what even the very best of human leaders can do. A good human leader can pass strong, wise, just laws that control our behavior. This king can change hearts. His peace, therefore, is a perfect peace. It's not just a temporary cessation of hostilities or a very effective wall. Don't you long for that? Now, there are lots of stories like this in the annals of mythology and fiction where a promised king or queen arrives to break the power of the oppressor and to bring peace and prosperity for all the people. What makes this story unique is that it's true. C.S. Lewis famously called it the true myth. This story that has echoes around the world actually came true at this point. 700 years after God made the promise through Isaiah, it happened. God himself entered his creation in Bethlehem as the baby Jesus. That baby born was God in human flesh, come to rescue and to rule. And if you read one of the four gospel accounts, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the historically reliable accounts of Jesus that you find in the Bible, when you read the history, you realize Isaiah wasn't exaggerating when he wrote these things. Here at last was a king with perfect wisdom, with personal integrity, and with justice. Read the whole of his life, and you find there's only one instance when he stands by and allows injustice to happen. And that's when he allowed the authorities to execute him on the cross. But he was sacrificing himself to pay for all the wrong things you and I have done. The king was giving his life to save his people. Now, he's not yet brought about the rule of perfect peace that's promised here, but the proof is in his resurrection. If he can die and then rise again, as he promised he would, to live forever, well, then we can believe him when he promises that one day he will return and bring about this rule of perfect, unending peace. And so here's my plea to you. I urge you as thinking adults to give Jesus Christ some serious attention. Take a break from binge-watching Christmas reruns and read the history at the heart of the true Christmas story. You can take one of these Luke's Gospels with you tonight. Read it and tell the person who invited you what you make of it. It's an offer both too good and too important to ignore that Jesus makes. Now, one of the reasons we love watching Christmas movies is escapism, especially when life feels a little bit bewildering, perhaps even frightening. It's just tempting to switch our brains off, to turn away from it all. And in many ways, Christmas, I think, these days is defined by escapism. It's a time to drown out reality by binge eating and binge drinking and overspending before the January hangover and the bills become due and reality really bites again. But if God's hope has come to the world in Jesus Christ, then there's no need to escape. The true message at the heart of Christmas is not a bright scene in a dark movie. It's a better story entirely. And if it's true, we don't need to escape or just to cling on to what security and comfort we can find. Instead, we can live bold and meaningful lives, safe in the knowledge that the King who came to earth so that we could know God, the King who died on the cross so we could be forgiven for the wrong things we've done, the King who rose to new and everlasting life so that we could live forever, will one day return and will bring all who trust in him into his perfect peace forever. That is the real life-changing hope at the heart of the real Christmas. And it's better than any movie ending. And because these things are true, because this is not just a story, I can wish you a very happy Christmas. Amen.